Good morning. Welcome to the November 4th, 2025 meeting of the Colorado River Basin Regional Water Quality Control Board. For everyone joining us in the meeting, please turn off or silence your cell phones. This meeting is being webcast and recorded, so please speak clearly. This meeting is being conducted in a physical location and is also available via remote access. For people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available. For those in the Zoom meeting, you will be muted with your camera off until it's your turn to speak. The host will then unmute you and ask you to turn on your camera, if you have one. When you are done speaking, the board members will have completed asking questions. You will be placed on mute and the camera turned off. You can remain in the Zoom meeting until the completion of the item and then choose to exit the meeting. Please note that the tour portion of today's meeting will be conducted on an in-person basis only. Neither remote participation or streaming will be available for the tour. I'd like to thank the City of Imperial. We are very pleased to bring our board meeting here at the city in Imperial County, where I live, by the way, and extend the appreciations for allowing us to use your facility. Board Member Wright, would you lead us to the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. Stand my nation on behalf of myself, liberty and justice for all.
Before we continue, I would like to ask Madam Clerk for a roll call.
Chair Perez.
Here.
Vice Chair Gonzalez.
Present.
Board Member Beltran Serrano.
Present.
Board Member Music.
Present.
Board Member Satin.
Present.
Board Member Wright.
Here.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. Council, did you want to say something?
Yes, I just at the outset, I just want to note that Board Member Music is participating remotely. Apart from the adoption of minutes, we have no action items on today's calendar. But consistent with the Bagley Keene Act, based on our roll call vote, we do have a quorum physically present here, so Member Music may participate. All he has to do is keep his camera on for as best he can during the meeting today. And also to announce if there are any adults in the room with him over the age of 18, if there is at any point. That's all.
Thank you. For the purpose of this public meeting, the regional board members will obtain it. Testimony and information from concerned and affected parties within the Colorado Basin River regarding quality issues, water issues. We welcome hearing from the public at this time. Any person wishing to speak should have submitted a speaker request as described in the agenda instructions. For those listed on today's agenda, you will make your comments at the time that the item is being considered. If you wish to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, you may speak now during the public forum. Comments will generally be limited to 3 minutes. The board clerk can now identify the speakers who have submitted the speaker cards for the public forum.
We do not have any.
Okay, thank you. Oh, does somebody raise their hand? Yes.
There we go. Good morning. My name is Dr. Idle Vessel Martinez, and I want to welcome you to our chambers here and thank you for conducting this meeting here. I'm Mayor Pro Tem of the City of Imperial. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, item, let's see here, approval of minutes. We now move to agenda item 3, which is the review and approval of the minutes for the board's prior meeting on September 2nd. Does any board member have comments or wish to propose changes to the minutes? No? Okay. May I have a motion on the approval of the minutes of the meeting on September 2nd?
Also move.
Second?
Second.
Madam Clerk, when we have roll call.
Chair Perez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Satin?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Agenda item 4, the board will now open a workshop on proposed total maximum daily loads for chloride and indicator bacteria in the Alamo River. The purpose of this workshop is the Colorado River Basin Water Board's to solicit comment on stakeholders and public and to design and to encourage and facilitate high level of interaction among the board members. The board welcomes public input on the item, and members of the public will have an opportunity to provide comments as well. As such, electronic speaker cards requests were submitted prior to the meeting to ensure a productive and efficient workshop. Oral presentations will be limited to 3 minutes, with additional time granted at the discretion of the board chair. There may be a quorum of the Colorado River board members present for this informational item. However, no board action will be taken. The order of speakers for this item are as follows. First, we will hear the presentation from Ryan Colhane, an environmental scientist on staff. Next, the board will hear comments from the public. And finally, we'll have the opportunity to ask questions and make own comments on the matter. Mr. Colhane, please proceed. My apologies if I didn't pronounce that correct. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Perez, members of the board. I'm Ryan Colhane. I'm an environmental scientist at the Colorado River Basin Regional Water Board. Today I'll be presenting a proposed basin plan amendment to the water quality control plan for the Colorado River Basin to establish total maximum daily loads, aka TMDLs, and implementation plans for chloride and indicator bacteria in the Alamo River in Imperial County. This is the second workshop for this TMDL. No board action is taken today, as said. The June 3rd workshop included toxicity, but the toxicity component has been removed. I'll provide an explanation later in the presentation. Next slide, please. This is the agenda for the workshop today. I'll start the presentation with a brief description of the regulatory background driving this action, and an overview of the Water Quality Control Plan, also known as the Basin Plan, for the Colorado River Basin region. Then I will go over the project overview and the project objectives, which will cover the water quality objectives and allocation loadings. This will then be followed by a discussion on the interested parties' involvement, how the scientific peer review process was completed, and implementation of the TMDLs. Finally, we'll address the delay in toxicity TMDL and comments that were received during the public comment period. Next slide, please. The state of California is required by both federal and state law to protect water quality within the state. The state's responsibilities are outlined at the federal level with the Federal Clean Water Act and at the state level with the Port of Colon Water Quality Control Act. The mission of the California Water Boards is to preserve, enhance, and restore the quality of waters for current and future generations. The area of the Colorado River Basin Region Water Quality Control Board is shown in gray on the right side of the map. Total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs, which is this workshop is about, are a requirement of the Federal Clean Water Act. TMDLs are implemented to improve surface water quality by placing allocations on the amount of a pollutant and can be discharged to a water body. Implementing TMDLs ensures that beneficial uses are protected and water quality standards are met. A basin plan amendment is required to change the point of the basin plan and must be approved by the Regional Water Board, the State Water Board, the Office of Administrative Law, and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Establishing a TMDL also go through the amendment process to be incorporated into a basin plan. So here's a quick guide to understand how all of the other amendment process work. A basin plan amendment is required for any proposed change to the basin plan. Initially, we identify the need for the amendment. In this case, the need for this amendment stems from the impaired waters list, or 303D. The next step is to contact any tribes with historical or ancestral ties in the project area, inform them of the potential project, and offer an opportunity for tribal consultation. Following the tribal consultation, or if there's no request for consultation, we'll begin the California Environmental Quality Act scoping, the CEQA. The draft staff report is developed, which is the basis for the draft amendment, then goes through the scientific peer review process. After the peer review, the amendment will be presented at both public workshop and public hearing for consideration first by the Regional Water Board, then by the State Water Board. This provides additional opportunity for public input. The Office of Administrative Law will ensure regulations are clear, necessary, legally valid, and available to the public. Before going into effect, the amendment will be finally approved by the US EPA. This workshop is a part of the Regional Water Board approval process. This is the second workshop presented before the Regional Board, which was originally planned in response to comments from the Imperial Valley Irrigated Lands Coalition, IVILC. Slide, please. A TMDL is the calculation of the maximum amount of a pollutant allowed to enter a water body so that the water body will meet and continue to meet water quality standards for that particular pollutant. This slide lists the elements that must be included in a TMDL. I'll briefly describe each of these elements. A completed TMDL must include a problem statement that describes which water quality standards are not being attained, which beneficial uses are impaired, and the nature of the impairment. Numeric targets are set to ensure recovery of the beneficial uses that are impaired and attainment of standards. Source analysis, which identifies the amount, timing, point of origin of the pollutants of concern. Linkage analysis determines how the numeric targets and the actions taken can help achieve water quality standards. Allocations distribute responsibility and identifies the parties to take the specified actions. Point sources are assigned waste load allocations, and non-point sources are assigned load allocations. Included in the allocation calculations is a margin of safety, which may be implicit by using conservative assumptions or explicit through a discrete allocation assigned specifically as the margin of safety. An implementation plan describes what actions will be taken to reduce the impairments. The final step is a monitoring or reevaluation process that describes the monitoring strategy that will be used and any requirements for reevaluation. The next few slides will explain the TMDL in this project. The Alamo River is in the Imperial County and runs from the international border with Mexico north to the Salton Sea. Land use within the area is predominantly agriculture, with a few urban areas such as El Centro and Brawley. The project objective is to improve the water quality of the Alamo River by implementing this TMDL and restoring beneficial uses. The Alamo River, like all regional waters, is routinely assessed for water quality and has been listed as impaired or not meeting the water quality objectives for several impairments. This project will focus on chloride and indicator bacteria. Monitoring has shown that concentrations of each pollutant in water samples were in violation of water quality objectives. Like any standard basin plan amendment for a TMDL, this amendment would also include the elements discussed last slide to improve water quality and to meet the water quality objectives and to protect beneficial uses. Chloride will be assessed as an individual impairment, but indicator bacteria water quality objectives will be given separately for Enterococcus and E. coli, with Enterococcus being the primary indicator according to conditions laid out in the basin plan. Narrative water quality objectives listed in the basin plan are applicable to all waters within the region. Narrative objectives include water qualities that should be met and can be impaired with numeric objectives. For these TMDLs, two objectives are pertinent: chemical constituents and toxicity. Because chloride concentrations could become toxic to aquatic life, we have left the toxicity narrative objective. However, there will not be a numeric objective specifically associated with that narrative objective. Essentially, both state that chemical or toxic substances should not be in such concentrations that they cause adverse effects on the beneficial uses. Numeric objectives have been previously established for chloride and indicator bacteria. The water quality objectives selected for the Alamo River are determined by beneficial uses. Beneficial uses are designated according to typical use of water and can include activities that are not recommended but still occur. All existing and potential uses must be designated. The beneficial uses with the most protective water quality objectives are those that protect human health and aquatic life, since there is the possibility for ingestion. The Alamo River is designed for both contact and non-contact recreation, is designated for both contact and non-contact water recreation, as well as warm aquatic habitat, wildlife habitat, and for use by rare, endangered, or threatened species. Other beneficial uses are designated but are not as protective of water quality as those listed above. Full definitions for each of the beneficial uses seen on the slide are included in the basin plan and the draft staff report. For these TMDLs, allocations for chloride and indicator bacteria are based on source analysis, numeric targets, and statistical analysis. Loads are allocated among various sources of pollutants and characterized as either non-point sources or point sources. Non-point source pollution occurs when runoff carries pollutants from the land, roads, and building into drainage ditches, lakes, rivers, and other water sources, and the discharge is unidentifiable. To identify the loading capacity allocated to existing and future non-point sources, non-point sources are assigned load allocations. Point source pollution occurs when pollutants are discharged into the conveyances, such as pipes, drains, and ditches, and the source of the pollutant is identifiable. Point sources, such as factories, sewage treatment plants, and concentrated animal feeding operations, are subject to regulation under the National Program Discharge Elimination System Program, also known as the NPDES program. To identify the loading capacity allocated to existing and future point sources are assigned waste load allocations. For non-point sources, the load allocations staff chose numeric criteria based on the narrative criteria previously mentioned. Chloride is set to 230 milligrams per liter, which is recommended for the beneficial use of warm aquatic habitat applicable to the Alamo River. Enterococcus and E. coli allocations are set according to objectives in the basin plan. Enterococcus is the bacteria indicator for REC 1 use and is set to 110 colony forming units per 100 milliliters as a statistical threshold value. E. coli is set to the REC 2 objective of 200 most probable number per 100 milliliters as a maximum allowable. Objectives for bacteria indicators are chosen based on salinity. The Alamo River is above the cutoff for the use of the E. coli as a REC 1 indicator. These objectives are also chosen due to the more infrequent monitoring of ambient water and the inability to calculate a rolling average. For point sources, the waste load allocation staff chose numeric criteria based on the narrative criteria and ambient water conditions to be tested. Chloride is set to 230 milligrams per liter, which is recommended for the beneficial use of warm aquatic habitat. Enterococcus and E. coli allocations here are different from the load allocations. This is because there's a greater frequency of sampling that takes place at NPDES facilities, and more stringent bacteria objectives can be used. The six-week rolling geometric means are attainable at these locations, and therefore these objectives were chosen. E. coli is 100 colony-forming units per 100 milliliter, and Enterococcus is 30 CFU per 100 ml. Interested parties were notified at the beginning of the project to facilitate involvement and include initial input for development of the TMDLs. Letters were sent out to the California Native American tribes with historic or ancestral ties in the project area to inform them of the potential project and offer an opportunity for tribal consultation. The regional board did not receive any requests for consultation. On August 10th, 2021, a CEQA scoping meeting was held to introduce the project to interested parties and receive feedback on potential issues that might arise, including impacts, mitigation measures, alternatives, or compliance. Only a few comments were received, and the feedback was included. We also held a workshop at the June 3rd board meeting during the public comment period for the TMDLs, which was from May 16th to July 18th, 2025. Today, we're holding the second workshop in response to a request from the Imperial Valley Irrigated Lands Coalition to explain changes made to the TMDLs. Regional Water Board staff are also required to submit the scientific basis and scientific portion of all proposed policies, plans, and regulations for external scientific review. Staff asked the reviewers to comment on whether the scientific portions of the TMDL staff report and implementation plan are based on sound scientific knowledge, methods, and practices. Specifically, the reviewers were asked to comment on five areas: whether the selection of numeric targets addressing impairments were accurate, whether the data analysis included in the report is effectively drawn from the sampling completed, whether the proposed source analysis is accurate from the data available, whether the proposed loading capacity and allocations are accurate and effective, and whether the proposed implementation is effective. Through the University of California, Berkeley's facilitated peer review selection process, three individuals with collective technical expertise in hydrology, agricultural pollutants, pollutant load assessment, toxicity, and irrigated agriculture are selected to review this document for scientific adequacy. The external scientific reviewers determined the scientific portion of the TMDL staff report and implementation plan was based on scientific knowledge, methods, and practices. The scientific peer review process was completed in March 2025. Moving on to the implementation, this TMDL will be implemented through our regional board's Imperial Valley Agricultural General Order and the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, NPDES, permits. The general order is implemented through our region's Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program, which has established the general waste discharge requirements for agricultural discharge. The general order also includes the farm plan, which outlines the management practice on irrigated agricultural lands to minimize or prevent the discharge of waste to waters of the state. The general order for Imperial Valley was adopted by the Colorado River Basin Water Board on December 14, 2021, which replaced the conditional waiver, which had been in use since 2015. The Imperial Valley General Order already includes many of the requirements included in this TMDL. Furthermore, the water quality restoration plans included in the Imperial Valley General Order are triggered by exceedances and require a Water Board's approved improvement plan. For point sources, NPDES permitted municipalities and facilities will be regulated through permits for their discharges to the Alamo River. NPDES permitted municipalities and facilities were identified as potential sources. Through the implementation of these TMDLs, the facilities will utilize the requirements put in place through either individual or general NPDES permits or waste discharge requirements, and therefore monitor and comply with the effluent limits developed from the waste load and load allocation for impairments. The toxicity component of these TMDLs would have been incorporated into the State Water Board's 2021, would have incorporated the State Water Board's 2021 statewide toxicity provisions. However, in light of a recent Court of Appeal decision, it is unclear whether the toxicity provisions will continue to exist in their current iteration. Regional Board staff have therefore elected to defer toxicity TMDL until these issues have been resolved. For this reason, toxicity, which was included in the original draft report, has been removed. Staff will address toxicity in a future TMDL. Peer review and public comment are included in the full draft staff report for transparency. There have been no board actions on these TMDLs so far. The board hearing will tentatively be in the early 2026 for adoption of the chloride and indicator bacteria TMDLs. The comment period ran from May 16th to July 18th, 2025, and ended following the previous workshop. We received one comment for each TMDL, all from the Imperial Valley Irrigated Lands Coalition. These comments will be addressed in the following slides individually. The comment for chloride TMDL encourages the Regional Water Board to conduct a use attainability analysis as the approach for the chloride TMDL. A use attainability analysis is used to remove designations of a water body. The analysis is done in a separate multi-year process, which is not within the purview of this TMDL. In any case, the Alamo River does not have any beneficial uses that are not existing or potential. The comment for bacteria TMDL focuses on part of a recommendation from one of the three peer reviewers, Dr. Leedy, out of the Southern Illinois University, who sees potential in utilizing microbial source tracking to identify the origin of bacteria. The comment asks that this will be completed prior to finalizing the TMDL. However, this TMDL is designed to find the sources of bacteria as the first step of implementation. The initial monitoring done will be to find those bacterial sources, and if the resources are available, that monitoring may include microbial source tracking. This is a self-monitoring program, and if IVILC is interested in completing microbial source tracking immediately, we encourage them to do so. NPDES facilities are self-monitoring, so we do not expect the program monitoring will find other sources in the Alamo River, though continued monitoring outside of those facilities is needed. As discussed earlier, the toxicity TMDL has been removed. However, a comment was given prior to this decision being made. Comment focused on the same one of the three peer reviewers that had approved the scientific methods used in these TMDLs. The staff response expected to highlight the discharges were the focus of this TMDL, and the reviewers' comments are broader in their scope. Those peer review comments have been addressed in Attachment C of the draft staff report. For transparency, the comments have been included here. This comment will be considered during the future development of toxicity TMDL. This slide shows the major milestones of the TMDL process. We're at the public workshop step. After addressing comments received, the final staff report and amendment language will be released prior to a hearing for the Regional Water Board to consider adopting these TMDLs. Once the Regional Board has adopted the TMDLs, they must be approved by the State Water Board, the Office of Administrative Law, and the U.S. EPA. With this, I'd like to thank you for your time and attention. If you have any questions, my contact information is available on this slide. And this concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, do we have any speaker cards on this item?
Yes, we do. Okay. First, I'd like to call Rachel Moggles.
Is this on? Okay. Good morning, Chair and members of the board. Thank you for the opportunity to comment today. I am Rachel Moggles. I'm the Executive Director of Imperial County Farm Bureau. We are the lead organization on the Imperial Irrigated Lands Coalition. These might be restating comments that were previously submitted orally and that were somewhat addressed in the presentation just now, but I'm just going to sort of reemphasize them. First, transparency. Peer review concerns from Drs. Lidai and Logsdon were not clearly conveyed to the board or the public, and the marked up response provided after our request still doesn't show how critical scientific comments were addressed. A credible TMDL needs a clear public record of reviewer input and staff responses. Second, chloride achievability. Even the peer review notes chloride is driven by intrinsic regional soils and may possibly never reach targeted objective concentrations. Adopting an unattainable TMDL sets growers up to fail without improving water quality. We are asking the board to direct staff to conduct a use attainability analysis or develop site-specific objectives before moving forward on any chloride target. You have used similar logic for the salt and sea's beneficial uses. That same practicality should apply here. Third, bacteria sources. Standard agricultural practices are not an evident source of impairment. Before assigning responsibility or new requirements, the board should require microbial source tracking to identify whether wildlife or other non-ag sources are the cause. Absent source DNA evidence, the TMDL risks placing costs and obligations on farmers for pollution they did not create. Fourth, the peer review itself appears incomplete. One reviewer stated she lacked sufficient information to do a full review, and we see no explanation of how staff closed that gap. Scientific integrity requires that the records show a complete review and resolution of key questions. Fifth, prior comments remain unanswered. In July, we asked how staff intends to pursue compliance with an unachievable chloride target and whether a UAA would be more appropriate. The current draft still carries a placeholder for responses to public comment. That is not adequate for policy decision of this magnitude. Finally, the staff report contains technical inconsistencies. Indicator selection and E. coli enterococcus references, data tables in need of updating, and background context that requires correction. These are fixable, but they should be fixed before an adoption. Our requests today are straightforward. One, publicly document and resolve peer review issues. Two, direct the UAA site-specific objective for chloride. Three, require microbial DNA source tracking before imposing bacteria-related obligations. Four, correct and update the technical record. And five, ensure our written comments are distributed to board members ahead of any action. We stand ready to collaborate on a scientifically sound, feasible path that protects water quality and recognizes on-the-ground realities in Imperial Valley. Thank you.
Thank you.
Curtis Pate.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. I am a pest control advisor and a certified crop advisor with the certification for nutrient management. So I can write the plans that you dictate that we have to have, but I really hope you'll take a good hard look at some of this stuff. Your report says that we have an intrinsic soil issue with chlorides. Your report also says that we're using chloride-based fertilizers. One of those is incorrect. We use almost nil chloride-based fertilizers because we have an abundance of chloride in our soil, and we don't want to harm the productivity of our soil by adding more. So I'm concerned about a management plan that is unattainable, and frankly, the way to attain it is to overrun our irrigation, to drop the concentration of the chlorides in the tailwater by not conserving the water that is desperately needed to be conserved. And that's the biggest issue in my mind in this, is that it's not attainable without violating something else that's very important to us. So with that, I will say thank you, and I hope you are very successful in finding a better route here. Thank you.
Thank you. Jose Angel.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board, staff. I wasn't sure how I was going to react to the staff report. I'm here, first of all, in my own professional capacity. My views and opinion do not represent my employer's opinion. This is on my own dime because I care. I spend currently about 70% of my time in the Imperial Valley. Regardless, I have over 35 years of professional experience. Most of my experience has been in developing and implementing water quality control policy. So my purpose today is, in a humble way, to share my professional experience on the proposed DMDLs. I really think it's bad policy when a regulatory agency establishes controls that are not attainable. That should give you pause. Because even if the staff is saying that they can achieve the TMDL, it's not going to happen. And that tells me that there is a disconnect between the staff and the people who know how to farm. And that should give you some pause, in my opinion. In spite of the implementation plan, Dr. Liddy, one of the peer reviewers, he was correct. It's highly unlikely that you will ever achieve the chloride TMDL. And it just has to do with the physics and the way people farm in the Imperial Valley. The concern when it comes down to chloride is not the surface water that comes off from the fields. That's probably going to resemble the Colorado River water quality. It is what happened beneath the root zone. The farmers need to leach salts, and the salts are already laden with chloride. So it is the tile water that is going to govern the water quality in the drains and in the river. It's not going to happen, in spite of the best wishes. That should give you pause, because you're going to put the farmers in an untenable position. I'm not following the conservation measures, okay? The state knew this was going to happen. Those of you who follow the proceedings on the Salton Sea, your previous executive officer, Phil Grunberg, went and provided testimony before the water transfer happened. And guess what he said? Well, there's going to be less water going into the sea, it's going to be more concentrated, and the sea will never be restored. It's never a good idea for the state, in my professional opinion, to punt the can down the road for a later date. That's what the state board said with the Salton Sea. In 20 years, we'll have a wonderful plan to restore it. And that plan has morphed into keeping the patient alive. This is a bad TMDL, not because I say so. Others, experts also tell you it's not attainable. And you're going to put the farming community in a very difficult position. But also, you risk all the progress that you made in the Imperial Valley with the farming community. I want to thank you for your time, and I appreciate where your staff is coming from, but it's not going to happen.
Thank you. Larry Cox.
Good afternoon. Thank you for coming down. Larry Cox, second generation farmer from Brawley. We farm in Imperial Valley. We farm in Mexico. We have an operation in Salinas. We operate in Yuma. We operate in San Joaquin Valley, and we operate on the Columbia River in Echo, Oregon. So we farm in several different locations, but this is our home. I guess the question that I'm not sure if it's maybe just rhetorical, when you're talking about chlorides are you talking about? Sodium chloride, calcium chloride, magnesium chloride. The main one we deal with here is sodium. And our baseline that comes in our irrigation water, I believe, is somewhere close to 700 parts per million. And we have a high evaporation down here. So as we grow a crop, you know, pure water evaporates, the salt is left. And if we don't, you know, if we don't drain the salts and the water out of our soils, we end up with a hypersaline soil that is not productive. And as right now, I believe that we're pretty close to the same amount of water that goes across our fields into the drain, surface runoff versus tile runoff. But the tile water is close to three times more salty than the surface water. And if you cut off our tile drains, he said, then you know we will not be able to produce product down here. I used to work where my dad was on the irrigation district board. He was close friends with Phil Gruenberg, who was the manager down here for the regional board, and was talking about trying, you know, that the scope for the Alamo and the New Rivers was not any different than a trout stream coming out of the Sierras. You know, and this has been designated. Salt and sea has been designated an agricultural sump, and we can do what we can. I guess the question I would have, you know, is there any room for a cost-to-benefit analysis on this? Like I said, our operation in Mexico, you know, to farm in California, the burden of the rules and regulations that California placed on us is almost $1,000 an acre per year now. Over the last 20 years, it's gone up threefold. The price of diesel, gasoline, electricity, minimum wage, 40-hour work week, workman's comp. The comp. We have a lot of advantages in California, but the disadvantages of working in California are getting to be to the point of basically putting it at economic disadvantage. There has been more and more product moved out of Imperial Valley to Yuma because of California-centric cost. More product moved to Mexico because of California-centric cost. So I guess, you know, economics, you know, trump politics at some point. So I mean, the question I guess I would like to take a look and say, okay, if we spend $100 million on this, what are the benefits going to be versus what the cost going to be? Thank you.
Thank you. Ronald, sorry, not sure how to pronounce your last name.
Langer.
Yes, thank you.
That's Ronald Leingruber. Thank you, Chairman Perez, for having this team, this hearing in Imperial Valley. The last one you had in Coachella didn't make a lot of sense to most of the growers here since it's going to be implemented in our region. But again, I echo some of the comments of Larry. We're farming in some of the highest regulatory environments in the nation. We're trying to provide water for 40 million people off the Colorado River. We've transferred almost 20% of our water allocation to the municipalities to try to meet those needs. We're asked to grow the cheapest, most affordable, abundant food supply in the world to keep feeding our nation and to feed the world and to prevent world famine and world hunger. Implementing this plan that's not attainable will put some farmers out of business and will allow the corporate farmers to come in and make this a corporate operation and the family farmers can't meet this, won't meet it, and just don't have the backbone to stand through this to try to figure out how to attain these things when they can't be attained. And trying to implement something like this in these conditions seem really crazy to me when we're asked to conserve water, we're asked to produce this food, and we're being pulled in six different directions and we can't do it all. So I would hope you would postpone this. You would get some more scientific peer review, and you'd analyze this and figure out an economical way that we can still afford to farm and produce the nation's most affordable, cheapest, abundant food while supplying 5% of the U.S. population with the water they need. Thank you.
Thank you. Stephen Benson.
Chairman Perez, thank you for the opportunity. Stephen Benson, I live and work in the Colorado River Basin area and also have fields that farm and discharge IID drains into the Alamo River. I'm a third-generation farmer from Brawley, also served on the Imperial Valley Irrigation District Board in the past, currently serve on the Imperial Valley or Imperial County Vegetable Board, and I don't represent any of those. I just speak for myself. I guess I ask you, what is the ultimate goal of the water cleanup of this river? And how does our water from Colorado River differ from the Alamo River or from the New River? We use the water from the Colorado River to farm, but currently we have to treat that water for bacteria for leafy green standards in order to grow the foods and vegetables that you currently eat. So that is naturally occurring. The chlorides that I see in our water are in the ground. They've been there for over the last 100 years when the ocean would back up in our lands and then settle down. And our only job as a farmer is to try to use that ground right now with the water we have. I really am concerned that currently there is no public use of the Alamo River. There's definitely no public use of the New River, and we're prohibited from going into the Salton Sea. So I'm just asking you, what are you trying to accomplish with this rule? I concur with Jose Angel, Larry Cox, Ronnie Limegruber, Curtis Pate, that you reconsider your proposal for the TMDL maximum daily load for chloride and bacteria. It's just hard for us to meet them on our farm, the water coming in and the water exiting our farm. Without the drains that Larry talked about, we would not be able to farm here in the Imperial Valley. So thank you very much.
Thank you. There is no more, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay. You want me to just say my name?
Yes, please. Howard.
Howard Elmore.
Elmore.
I really don't have anything to add to everything. Comments made earlier. I just wanted to share one picture. If I might, I don't know if I should have printed it out or whatever. I'd like to just walk around and show it. This is our water source. This is the lower Colorado in state of Arizona, where the Grand Canyon is. And it was taken up Mr. Limegruber there, 1st of September. And I don't know why our standard should be any better than what the federal government delivers to us, if I might. So in quick summation, there's my 1,000 words, one picture. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing. Do we have any questions or comments from the board members?
I just want to talk. The question I have has to do with the cost of benefit. Can you give me some, tell me about it? Or is it, will it work? Is it a good idea? Why isn't it a good idea if it isn't?
I'm going to direct that question to Emma McCorkle, our Basin Planning Unit Chief.
And I'll jump in as needed, Emma.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, everyone on the board. Thank you for coming down. We have done some cost-benefit analysis already with the Imperial Valley Ag Order whenever we created it. And some of these requirements are already in there. They are already sampling for chloride and indicator bacteria and everything. The bacteria standards that we're proposing in the TMDL are actually already in that order. So the cost-benefit analysis has already been done, at least to that extent. Our problem with chloride is that, I agree, the standard is low, but we don't have enough data to actually do an adjustment to that standard, because we know the soils are saline down here, but there's no study that says how much that is, so we can't actually add any natural background into it. So this is the standard that we have that has already been approved by EPA and what we have available to us. In future, we're hoping this data will lead us to where we can adjust it to where it does make sense. But right now, we don't have the information.
What does that mean? Because we impose this TMDL, and that means that they're now liable for violations, I assume, if they're not meeting that requirement. I see legal shaking their head.
Not exactly. So a TMDL is basically a division of the pie and says, okay, this is what needs to happen in order to meet the existing water quality objective. And the existing water quality objective is, Emma, is it 230 milligrams per liter? And that's based on the US EPA regulation. So that is the default approach. Now, that is the existing conditions that we have. And the action that will be before the board, well, the regional board is required to adopt a TMDL to address that is aimed at achieving, to the extent possible, the existing water quality objective. So, you know, we are receptive to what many of the folks here were saying, in that, you know, raising questions as to the achievability of that. We are not shutting the door on it. But right now what we are doing is we are adopting a TMDL that is aimed at achievement, to the extent possible, that the impairment as it exists right now, which is the existing water quality objective. We can talk about changing the objective, which is what the folks appear to be, you know, requesting. But that's an entirely separate board action, an entirely separate basin plan amendment.
What do you mean? What do you mean totally separate?
Because we can go back, if we were to get more data, and it's worth noting that this TMDL basically says that we are, you know, the assumption in this TMDL is that continued implementation of the irrigated lands regulatory program will achieve, you know, the objective. Now, some may quibble with that, but that is what the assumption here is being made in this basin plan. So this TMDL is essentially saying we're going to continue to implement the program that we already have. And it does not impose any new liability on anyone, you know, based on the existence of this TMDL. Now, we can adopt this TMDL, and then we can change based on new scientific data. We can come back and say, actually, we'd like to revise that water quality objective to match conditions on the ground, so to speak. And that will affect our Section 303D listing, which means that impairment may go away. And that, you know, depending on what we develop. But that's not what we're doing. We're just simply, this basin plan amendment is simply a statement that says the irrigated lands regulatory program, as it continues to be implemented, will achieve this objective, which, fair enough, we could talk about the, you know, achievability of it, but what is the objective is a separate question than just simply saying we're going to implement the irrigated lands regulatory program.
I'd like to add a little bit as well. Ms. McCorkle verbalized is that the actual criteria are already in their permit. Mm-hmm. So the irrigated lands program is already required to meet the criteria. What this TMDL does is it also imposes the criteria on point source dischargers so that we can get additional data about where the concentrations of this contaminant are coming from. The other thing is the TMDL is really a living document. What you do is you adopt this document that says this is the EPA or this is the criteria that's applicable to a water body that has these particular beneficial uses. Then you have the mechanism to put into the permit the monitoring to get the data to determine where the contaminant is coming from. You also get ambient data regarding the water body, and you determine how much is actually there. And if indeed it is coming from groundwater, which is one of the things that the order requires the farmers to do, which is monitor their groundwater, then we will see that as well and be able to go back in and modify the TMDL as is required and potentially have an update to the water quality objective at that point.
Is the UAA, I think that's what they called it, is that the same study that we would need to determine whether or not the 230 limit is too low, or is it a different study, or what does that look like?
It would be a different study, but we could use the TMDL to do the site-specific objective. A UAA is essentially a change to a beneficial use. So all of the uses that exist for the Alamo River, regardless of if they are recommended or not, they do exist. We do have freshwater fish species that they adapt to brackish waters, which is more like what the Alamo is, but they are technically freshwater species, so that use is there, and we have to protect for it. EPA will not let us de-designate something that is existing.
So it would be easier to do the attain source data about where the chloride is from than it would be to amend the uses of the Alamo River?
Yes.
Sounds like. Okay. Would it be cheaper?
No, because it would basically lead to a fight with EPA. They do not let you change beneficial uses willy-nilly.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it has a hand up. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I wanted to sort of...
Your microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry. I also wanted to sort of address the general comments that we got during that process. A lot of the comments go to specific... We also got some written comments prior to, I believe they were distributed to the board. And what Emma and the team has done is gone back and looked at the draft staff report. So there are a couple of updates that we are planning to do. So we're planning to address the comments that we have gotten. And then these comments that we've received today will also be addressed in the final report. Hopefully, we'll be able to share those out prior to the board meeting where the decision is considered and be able to have additional communications with the representatives for the farmers.
Excuse me, Chair Perez. Board Member Music would like to comment.
Okay, sounds good.
Go ahead. Good morning. My question is, it says the initial flow of the Alamo River comes from the All-American Canal. What percent is that of the total flow? And then do we have a water quality report on this All-American Canal water that's going into the Alamo River?
It's very minimal. So it's basically seepage from where it's unlined or leaking, basically. I think it's like 1 or 2 CFS. It's very, very minimal. There's not a lot of flow at the international boundary for the Alamo. We do have those reports. It's basically, you know, what the commenters have mentioned. It's that Colorado River water that's being, you know, transferred through the All-American Canal. So it's roughly 700 parts per million of total dissolved solids. What that is for chloride, I have not been able to find. There's not a lot of most of the sampling is TDS, not chloride specific.
So when you say minimal, do you mean like 5% of the total, 10%, 2%? What would you guess?
Probably like 1 or 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not a lot. No.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
So when I hear a lot of people out here saying unattainable, unattainable, we're never going to be able to get there. Give me something that will let me think that maybe someday they will be able to get there through this process.
The hope is that we can decrease the amount of salts, but 230 may be impossible. But that is something. I hear the laughter. But it's our starting point. That's the whole thing. We can't just pull an objective out of the air and use it. Nobody's going to approve that. So we're using the 230 as our starting point, and then we'll adjust as we collect data and see, okay, this is definitely from the soil or groundwater, or maybe the wastewater treatment plants have something. Who knows? We don't have enough data to parse out all of that. But through this TMDL, we hope to collect it so that, that we can then adjust that to where it makes sense.
What happens if we find out that it's unattainable?
Cross that bridge when we come to it.
Well, so I guess
We have a couple of options, and one option is if it's unattainable, then we go back in and we modify our TMDL. And typically, with implementation plans, periodically you go back and you pull all the data that you've collected and you look at it and you see what you're getting. And if indeed you find that the contamination is coming from NPDES permits, then you ask them to ratchet down. If you find that it's coming from CAFOs, then you ask them to ratchet down. Whomever is permitted in the region, you look at. And you also look at what's ambient in the water body as well, whether or not it's coming in the water from the All-American Canal. Now, we're not expecting the farmers to account for the contamination that is coming in from that canal, but we have to look at the whole pie and determine where the contamination is coming from.
So there'll be no penalties for them? When do that? I mean, they're going to come in and we're giving. We don't know what that is really out there, but they can't get to that point. And so are they paying penalties the whole way while we're trying to figure out what is attainable? That's the way it works?
No.
Okay.
Right now, they're not. Right now, that limit is in their permit.
And the chloride one is not.
Which one?
The chloride.
The chloride one is not in the permit.
Yeah.
But the others are.
Mm-hmm.
The others are in their permits. And they're not getting violations.
No.
And the chloride's not in this TMDL right now. It got taken out, correct?
The chloride is
toxicity was removed.
The toxicity.
Mm-hmm.
Is it procedural, right? So we can't even request monitoring if we didn't have any TMDL declared for chloride? Is that kind of what we need to be doing here?
It's already in the agricultural order. They're sampling for chloride already, but mm-hmm. for the wastewater treatment plants, the CAFOs, and anybody else, it's not in there. The TMDL will put that in their permits.
Okay, I understand.
So it's not, wouldn't be in... It wouldn't be in the permit.
Yeah, no.
That's just the goal.
Yes, yeah.
And 230 is, we are using, so it sounds like to some extent the number is somewhat arbitrary, but the best data we have right now is US EPA 2006, so that's what we are setting it as.
Yes.
Can we acknowledge in the order that we suspect the local numbers or the actual number is going to be higher or something like that to acknowledge that? But like pending additional sampling.
So yeah, I think what we could do is we could write in the staff report. Keep in mind, this is only the supporting staff report. The board hasn't actually, we have not prepared and posted, draft basin plan amendment language. It would follow along this. It would just be a shorter, more concise version of this. But we could certainly acknowledge that, we need more data, and there may be a need to reevaluate the default objective, which that's what it is. It's the default objective at a later date. We could acknowledge that, and then that additional data would help us get there.
That is in the staff report. It does state that
the
site-specific objective is likely needed.
Yeah.
So what about the chloride is in the soil? If it's really heavy in the soil, you might not ever get rid of it.
That would be a good reason.
Yeah, that would be natural background.
That, but so it would be part. It would not be part of it. Then.
Yeah, and that is something that we can't account for. The problem is, I've even talked to the USDA salinity lab in Riverside. Nobody has actually done like a salt balance in Imperial, at least that they were aware of or that I have been able to find. If the farmers have that, then that would be really great and useful for us. But that would be something that we would account for that we just don't have.
That would probably fall under that court hearing about not being responsible for some pollutant that you didn't wasn't yours.
Yeah.
But it happens to be in the water that you're being using. Yeah. So, okay.
Excuse me, Chair Perez, Board Member Music would like to speak.
Go ahead.
Yes, another comment is cost benefit, and is it financially attainable or is it cost prohibitive? Is that a report our staff would prepare, or would we have to use an outside consultant for that?
Yeah, we would have to do an outside consultant to do a greater cost benefit analysis than what we've already done for the ag order itself.
Okay.
There are also water quality restoration plans that are in the order for the general ag order that basically state if you have 3 out of 4 exceedances for a pollutant, then you have to create a plan to address that in some way. And that is across the board of everything that they have a limit for in the permit.
And that's how we would address potential violations. If indeed they got a concentration that was above the water quality criteria, we would use that methodology to determine whether or not it was a real exceedance and move forward with collecting additional data to be able to calculate a site-specific objective.
Did we get any feedback from people that would be under the NPDES aspect of this? Any point source folks that were? Any
no.
comments from? Okay. I see a hand up.
As you guys have been discussing this, I'm Curtis Pate. I went back and looked at the IID. The IID does water quality tests on the high flow irrigation water coming into our system. Chloride is testing between 110 and 130 coming in, and that's in high flow. That's not concentrated down in our tailwaters. So there, besides being resident in our soil, we continue to get more chloride load in our irrigation water to the level of 110 to 130. Thank you.
Thank you.
So is that enough data?
Well, we have quite a bit of obviously comments and written and in person. So we obviously will be taking everything into consideration. We still have a decision to make. We certainly don't want anybody to lose their livelihood, and we certainly still want crops in this county. So to be continued.
If the board indulge me. If your staff at this point doesn't know where this stuff is coming from, that should give you pause. You should leave the wastewater treatment plants out of the chloride TMDL. They're not a significant source. There's less than, I want to say, 2% of the total flow, perhaps even less. So if you don't know that by now, this thing is not ready for prime time. The stuff is coming from the agricultural runoff tile water. And the staff has data that shows that. Whether they have sufficient data to develop site-specific objectives is a different issue. But everyone knows, at least everyone in the farming community knows where this stuff is coming from. Mark my words. If you put it in the general order, it is enforceable. I would stipulate that it's enforceable, Mr. Plasencia, that all orders from the water board have to be enforceable? Have to be enforceability criteria? How you enforce at the staff level? You have some discretion. Are you going to put in writing that you're not going to go after the farmers? The focus should be to work to get the right data. But I would submit for your consideration that you have less intrusive ways to go about it than when at TMDL. You have less intrusive ways to get the data. They could have issued a revised monitoring program. They could have done a number of things. But they're offering you an all or nothing proposition. Just let us get this thing on the books and eventually we'll amend it as needed. How many TMDLs does this regional board has amended since 2001? That's problematic from a policy perspective, because you're right, Ms. Perez, you're talking about people's livelihoods. You're absolutely right. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comments from the board? David, counsel, any further comments?
Nothing further at this time. I think we've done our best, and we're going to continue to try to do our best to be responsive to these comments and acknowledge that we do need more data and we have more work left to do. And we'll carefully consider these comments moving forward.
Thank you. Okay. There are no items today on the uncontested or contested calendar. The board will now continue with information items on today's agenda, including items 5 through 9. For agenda item 5, the board will now hear a presentation from Vivian Macianoviu. I'm so sorry. From Vivian, with the California Department of Water Resources, providing a presentation on the Salton Sea Species Conservation Habitat Project. This presentation is a prelude to the tour we have scheduled this afternoon and will provide an update on restoration activities that are ongoing at the Salton Sea. This is an informational item only. No actions will be taken. Proceed. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, member of the board, Mrs. Chairman, and staff. Thank you for having me. First, before I start, I just want to mention that and underline the great collaboration that we've had with the regional board staff. And this is the result, essentially, of that collaboration. Next slide, please. So today I'll be talking about and give an update on the Species Conservation Habitat Project, what we have completed to date. We'll talk about the East Pond 1 and some future expansions that we have for the project. We'll also mention the Vista Point, part of our recreation, and we'll also talk about monitoring. Next, please. So to date, we have about 2,000 acres that are filled with water and functional as a habitat, as we plan on doing. And that's going to be the ponds that are located on the east side of the picture, and those represent, one is about 750 acres, and the other one is 1,250 acres, for a total of 2,000 acres. And they're currently filled with water. The other side, on the west side of the New River, has also been fully built, and all the infrastructure is also built, but the soil currently is used for the expansion that we're envisioning. And I'll go through the process of building the berms so you can understand why we need to keep that site still dry in order for us to do the expansion. Next slide, please. So that's the fully built Species Conservation Habitat Project. It is roughly 9,500 acres that represent over 7,000 football fields, if that can give you an idea. So this afternoon you will see a lot of things, but much easier to assess from the sky. But at least we'll see the West Pond, the 2,000 acres, which is still a fairly small part of the entire project, but you will see how significant it is for the wildlife. Next, please. So in this picture here, we have the heart of the project. It's our diversion system at the New River. And our mixing system that allows the Salton Sea water to be mixed with New River water, then push through gravity in our sedimentation basin before it goes into the different ponds. So the currently the pond that's on the left side of the picture is full. You see it dry right now, but that's an older picture. But this area is actually full. So we do have a functional diversion system currently where water is mixed between New River and Salton Sea water. Next, please. So this is another picture looking south of our sedimentation basins and our diversion systems. For an idea of scale, you can see those loaders parked on the left of the pictures. So those can carry up to 30 yards of earth, of soil. So that should give you about an idea of how pretty big this area is. So the western kidney-shaped basin that you see on the left of the picture is roughly 30 acres. So remember that the entire project is close to 9,500 acres. And the other one to the right is about 70 acres. Next, please. So this is another view looking north of those same sedimentation basin. That picture was taken again a while back last year. We can see now the basins located on the right side of the picture are full now, and those were temporary. So the basin coming out of sedimentation basin on the top left of the picture was temporary and currently is full. Next slide, please. So it's another view of the East Pond and further in the background, East Pond 1. So that area represents around 2,000 acres, and you can see there's still Salton Sea water at the further end of that picture, and that's, of course, the Salton Sea, but it has receded since then. And to build the East Pond 1, we had to essentially build in the wet. And that's going to be important for as we go further. Next slide, please. So this is a close-up of a Lofing Island. So that's an island used by the birds to essentially just hang out, essentially, but they're actually using it for also nesting in some occasion, depending on the species. So we're still learning on the usability of those islands and what the birds are doing with them. But what we were able to create essentially in those ponds is a very complex habitat that can receive those diverse birds populations, how you'll be able to see this afternoon. Although we had the tail end of the nesting season, so we have less, but we should still be able to see quite a bit this afternoon. Next slide, please. So we used to have a webcam, and it's still available, and you can see how we progress the filling of those basins. So that is just a link on this presentation that showed the progress of the construction for East Pond and East Pond 1. Next slide, please. So this is just a construction of the East Pond 1. So the East Pond 1 is the further into the sea pond. It's around 750 acres. It was funded through a federal grant that we receive under the Bureau of Reclamation. As you can see, we are actually in the Salton Sea. We're about a mile from shore at this point, and in about 6 feet of water. So construction is somehow of a challenge in such a soft soil and in the wet. We also have to deal with wave and also wind action. So it took us a while to learn how to do it. But eventually our builder, Kiewit, was able to essentially figure it out and keep on building those berms. Next, please. So the green is a disturbance of the bottom sediment. So as the way we build those berms is by harvesting the soil present on the site. We have to moisten it first. And then let it dry until it gets the right moisture, the right level of moisture. And then it's a push onto the sea and then compacted. So we have first a failure that happens. So if you see on the side, the weight pushes the sediment sideways, and that creates the disturbance in the soil and in the water column. So we have a temporary, of course, disturbance of the sediment, and everything eventually settles down. We also, as a way of building and protecting the area, putting some geotextile and some rock barrier to prevent further erosion and potential potentially affecting water quality into the ponds and the Salton Sea. Next, please. So here we see the completed berm for the East Pond 1. What you see here are some turnarounds for maintenance vehicles. While it looks really wide, the actual usable surface of the berm is fairly narrow in the middle. But of course, we allow for turnarounds in case our vehicles or equipment needs to go back. Next, please. So this is the completion of the East Pond 1 northern berm. You can see it was built into the sea, and that will have an impact right now, as it will show into our water quality monitoring, onto the salinity of our current ponds, the East Pond 1. Next, please. So this is the completion and the East Pond full of water. So we are not looking at the East Pond 1 being full, but only the East Pond. So that pond here represents 1,300 acres. Or 1,350 acres, and we can see the islands and the east pond not being filled yet to the top right of the picture, or to the right of the picture. Next, please. So on the ground, this is the result. So we saw right away birds coming into the ponds through a diversion of New River water. We were able to see pupfish, shad, but also tilapia, colonizing the ponds right away, and we instantly saw active feedings. We saw many species of fish-eating birds, including brown and white pelicans, and of course terns feeding at the site earlier in the months. Next, please. Some pictures of those pelicans that were not present until recently in this area of the sea, just waiting for breakfast, I'm assuming. Next, please. And difficult to monitor, I have to say. You have to stand very far away, and this is us trying to keep and on trying to take a nice picture of them during an active feeding session, and of course it took off as soon as we came anywhere close with a drone. So we're still learning on how to monitor them properly. But again, you can see here that they're enjoying the habitat here. Next, please. So the future expansion will include the ponds that we see, the central ponds, and also the northern ponds. So we have three additional ponds that we are currently building, and we actually actively building on the eastern side of the northern ponds, the central ponds, and also the central section of the central ponds. So I'm going to go to the next slide, please. So I was talking earlier on how we have to treat the soil in order to build those berms, and berms that are able to, remember, they can seep through because we need to embank all that water in order to create that habitat. Otherwise, our water demand would be much too high in order for us to sustain this habitat. So first, what we do, we identify a clay type of soil. Fortunately, we have plenty of it in the area. And that clay has to be dried up first. If it's not fully wet, we have to make sure that it doesn't have organic elements in it. So once it's dry, it's then wetted. Next slide, please. So the contractor has to create those ponds with water in them in order to wet that soil and reach a certain level of moisture in order for us to be able to transport that soil onto the berm in order for it to be brought there and compacted. And so at that point, because of handling this soil like three times already, we're able to reach compaction of 90%. Next, please. So this is an example of how the soil is brought forward and to the construction of the berm. So this is the eastern side of the central ponds that is being built currently. That's an active construction site. And we're hoping by the end of 2028, we'll basically reach the 9,500 acres that I mentioned earlier. Next slide, please. So the Vista Point. So the Vista Point is part of our passive recreation. It's located at the very bottom corner, left bottom corner of the site. Next, please. So the Vista Point, as of right now, doesn't look like much. It's not done yet, but we have a planting plan where we're going to have a garden where people will be able to see native species that will be identified. We'll also have panels that are currently being worked on with local tribes. We will have also some picnic tables that you can see there. They will be covered. We'll also have, and we already have, a bathroom that we can see kind of on the top corner of that picture. And the location of this Vista Point was very important in order for us to show the visitors the different type of habitats that we have at the SCH project. Next slide, please. So from this view, we'll be able to see some fresher water habitat brought by the interception ditch that runs along the side of the project. That will be essentially a fresher water habitat, which will be vegetated. And then from this side, we'll have intermediary, shallow, deep, and island habitat that we'll be able to see from the Vista Point. Of course, this is a much more elevated view of it, but the platform of the Vista Point will also be elevated with binoculars in order for visitors to look at the birds and the different birds that will be using this habitat. Next slide, please. So we'll quickly go over the monitoring and what effort we currently have. So I just want to let people know that we currently haven't taken possession of the project. The commissioning period is not there yet. We're working with our contractor to still refine the project itself on how to best operate it. Next slide, please. So we have several documents. Some of them are mandatory under our permits, like the Species Conservation Habitat Monitoring and Adaptive Management Plan, or MAMP. We also have a monitoring and implementation plan, which is Salton Sea-wide. And we also have an air monitoring plan, which is covering also the Salton Sea and some other of our projects. So it's more general. So a lot of those efforts concentrate on, of course, monitoring. The challenge right now, and also we're working closely with other entities, such as the regional board, in order to do a collection of that data. But what's important is to make that data available to the public so it can make sense to them. And also that data, ideally, would like to use it for us to improve on the management of this project. Next slide, please. So we have some historical points that are where we are actually taking samples throughout the Salton Sea. They're called USGS 1 through 5, I think. And we're trying to keep it the same so we can go back through the years to make sure that we essentially look at the same data. But of course, with this project being built, we have to adapt, of course, to what we're exactly looking at. We have to make sure that this project is successful, is properly used, and we also have to make sure that we are not creating an environment that could be detrimental for the species. Next slide, please. So this is the CDEN, and that's part of the query tool that we could use. The data, again, it's data that can be stored, but data also that we would like to put in different tools, if possible, more accessible to the general public. And it's not as simple as it sounds. We really want to make sure that it makes sense for everyone when we're looking at this. So we're going to talk about the CDEN. Next slide, please. So this is something that I've just played with some of the data that we've collected so far into our ponds, making sure that we have some sort of a trend when we're looking at the ponds specifically. And we, of course, I'm not seeing anything yet, but it is essentially to show essentially that we want to have a baseline. We want to see how things are evolving and how they're evolving based on different parameters. So just to give you an example of what we are doing right now, but of course this needs to be refined and this to be very carefully explicit to the public and make sure that this is data that they can inform them. We're hoping also, of course, long-term to work with local schools. That could be part of some of their projects on looking at different aspects of this project and what can be done with those data. Next, please. So we're looking, and of course, at DO and temperatures and all the factors. It's a little too far for me to see, but let's see. So, of course, I wanted to point out that some chlorophyll is more prevalent in some ponds than others. And we don't see any specific trends, really, as far as the dissolved oxygen. But again, this is going to be an ongoing effort, and we'll definitely monitor to see exactly how we can improve on the conditions, if possible. Next slide, please. So you see, here we have the conductivity. Just want to point out that East Pond 1 has a really high conductivity, and so that's because of the fact we build into the wet. So part of the salt and sea and that water is still into the pond, and it will take time to flush it out. So that effort that was taken shortly after we closed essentially that East Pond 1, and the water basically barely mixed into the East Pond 1. But you can see that our objective in those ponds are essentially to be between 20 and 40 in the long run. So East Pond, we're right in there. And the sedimentation basin is still very low. But of course, this is going to increase as we're ramping up our effort and also ramping up the pumping at the Salton Sea, which is already has occurred. This data is dating from the beginning of the year. Next, please. So water monitoring. So currently on CDEC, which is the DWR, essentially a way to keep the a finger on the pulse of anything water, we have four stations that are directly reported onto CDEC. So you can see there where we have dissolved oxygen. We also have conductivity and I believe temperature as well. So this is directly into the ponds. And we have four at the moment, and one, I believe, at the Salton Sea, located into our pumping station at the end of our causeway. So that data is available. It's a lot of data. It's something basically that we need to work on. But again, once we have the projects under control, we'll be able to better work on that data and make sure that we can show to the public exactly what that data shows. We also have, so I put the link on that presentation for the CDEC station locator. Next slide, please. So air quality monitoring, we have several stations around the Salton Sea, essentially giving us a baseline on the conditions in some areas and also telling us whether or not the project that we're implementing on these different sites is are working or not. So some of those stations in the future may go offline. Once we've proven that some of the treatment that we've implementing is working. Next slide, please. So as bird monitoring goes, we do have the Department of Fish and Wildlife actively monitoring the species conservation habitat for birds. So we're reporting thousands and thousands of birds where there used to be essentially nothing. But that report is going to probably come at the end of the year. Again, some more data that we have to make sure that talks to people. Otherwise, there is the eBird checklist, which that's a link right there, conducted by Audubon, and that's something that people can go see for themselves and the different species present around the project itself. Next, please. And thank you very much. I'll take any questions if you have any.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions, board members?
No. I had one question. Could you share what are the projected OM costs for the very fancy engineering?
Yeah. So it will highly depends on once the whole project is built, of course, and there will definitely be an economy of scale. But we're looking probably around $2 to $5 million for the maintenance. That's the projected cost, and that's going to be spread over several years, of course.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
What's the projected lifetime of the project?
So at the moment, one of us criteria was to have 35 years of life expectancy, but we're hoping, of course, to bring it beyond that with proper maintenance. We did, because it's a very heavy investment from the state, and we do have to protect our infrastructure, We didn't want to expend too much money on some aspect of this project. So I will take the example of our saline pump station. The sea, as we know, is receding, and we wanted to be able to pump saline water for at least the next 35 years. So for that reason, we had built this pump station out at sea and built a trench into the sea that goes about 3.5 miles out into the sea in order for us to keep pumping that water throughout the life expectancy of this project. We're thinking that after that, also, we're going to have a lot less demand for salt water, because as you know, once you have a salt load, then you can basically use it to your advantage.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. See you this afternoon.
Turning to agenda item 6, the board will now hear from Executive Officer Michael Plasencia.
Good afternoon, Chair Perez, Vice Chair Gonzalez, members of the board, and members of the public. I'm Michael Plasencia, Executive Officer. Just a couple brief updates. On August 20th, I joined Emma McCorkle and Samantha Shapiro at the Torres Martinez Alianza Salton Sea Environmental Quality Research and Community Science Workshop. The workshop was well attended and included leadership and residents from the Torres Martinez tribe and researchers from Loma Linda University, UCLA, and Brown University. It was an excellent opportunity to hear directly from environmental health researchers and what they are observing at the Salton Sea, how they will be conveying this information to local communities, and how the residents in those areas feel. We also heard about some resources that are available to communities to mitigate the presence and impact of airborne pollutants. We were able to strengthen our cooperation and relationship with leaders of this community and to discuss our role in the ongoing process of exploring solutions to pollution in the communities surrounding the Salton Sea. You have my board, my report and your binders, but I'll highlight a couple of items from that report. Every month, sometimes multiple times a month, and often in very hot days, regional board staff coordinate the work of the New River Sampling Program by preparing sample bottles, coordinating lab contracts, and assisting in record keeping. In August, the staff members who did this work were Jeff Fitzsimmons and Julia Mesta. In September, this work was coordinated by Adrian Lopez and Kevin Gonzalez. Also in September, staff joined the California Department of Fish and Wildlife boat crew and science team for water quality sampling at three sites at the southern end of the Salton Sea. They took samples to be analyzed for multiple pollutants, including bacteria, nutrients, and pesticides. This is part of an ongoing sampling effort to obtain data on the quality of the Salton Sea consistent with the Salton Sea Management Program. And this effort is being led by our own Emma McCorkle, our Basin Planning Unit Chief. Also in September, I joined the chairs meeting up at the State Water Board with Chair Perez and Vice Chair Gonzalez. And it was a pretty helpful and beneficial discussion about future strategic planning statewide and how that might impact the work we're doing here in Region 7. This concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? No? Thank you very much. Okay, the next item is Chair's report. The only thing I have to state is we attended the conference. It was very informative. One of the things that was highlighted is progress on the New River. And although it may not seem like a lot of work, but we have come a long way. We had the honor of seeing the new gadgets that they have there to clean up the area. And I know we have a long way to go, but at least we are doing something in that arena. The next item is number 9, 2026 board meeting dates.
Excuse me, Chair Perez?
Yes.
We skipped the board member comments. Item 7.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That's true. I'm going ahead of time. Okay. Do we have any number 7 comments from the board for future agenda items?
No, I just have a comment, just quickly. Bulletin 118, which is a real important bulletin for water issues, they're having an update in 2025, which I think is really good. I think maybe every 5 years, I guess they have to. So anyway, so I think it'd be a really good thing, and I'm waiting. Can't wait till we can get a copy of it. So.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Okay, so now I can go back down to number nine. Do any, excuse me, so sorry here. The agenda item number nine is for the meetings for 2026. We have all proposed dates in our binder. And do any members have any questions or comments regarding these dates or time frames? No? Can we have a roll call vote, please?
I haven't yet, but I'm good, yeah. I just didn't realize it was an action.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
So moved.
Yes.
Second?
Okay, second.
Thank you.
Okay, Chair Perez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Satin?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Okay. Item number 10.
Number 9.
Council, do we have any matters to discuss in closed session?
No, we do not.
Okay, the final item of the agenda is a tour to the Salton Sea Species Conservation Habitat Project located at the southern end of the Salton Sea in Imperial County. The board staff will provide tour transportation to the board members. All the participants will be expected to make their own transportation arrangements. Members of the Regional Water Board staff and other interested parties can now proceed to our meeting place described in today's noticed agenda. Due to transportation constraints at this active construction site, public participation for a tour of the project will be limited to the first 20 total attendees on a first-come, first-basis. At this point, we are concluding the portion of the public meeting that is webcast and available on remote participation. Again, the tour, though open to the public, will not be streamed online or available on remote for participation or viewing. At the conclusion of the tour, the board will adjourn the public meeting. The next meeting is tentatively scheduled for December 2nd at 10 a.m. and will be held at the Colorado River Basin Water Quality Control Board in Palm Desert. Meeting is adjourned. Or for now. For now.
You mean to say we are in recess?
We are in recess.